Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again. 012T.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, hey, I'm here.
How you doing? Over in Skype land, I believe we have Rob T. Firefly. He's on the laptop, but he's not on the board. Kyle, why is that? It's like the laptop isn't plugged in or something. Is that possible? Okay. Now I'm not plugged in. Okay. Try that again, Rob. No, you're still over on the laptop. Okay. Growing pains here as technology adjusts to our needs. fortunately, I'm prepared for such an emergency because I have a stack full of papers here. Unfortunately, our toner is running low, so it's going to be difficult for me to read from this, but I'm going to do the best I can. We talked about the FTX story quite a bit last week. I believe we talked about it on the air. We might have talked about it on Overtime, Overtime being the show that follows this on YouTube. Kyle, do you have an update on our technical issues?
Yes.
What's the update? You can't just walk away and say there's no update. Okay. FTX I don't know how else to say it, destroyed. Are we on or not?
Yes, I'd like to introduce a couple of our guests. I think over there is Rob.
Good evening.
Wait, so it only works if you introduce him? That's how it is?
Okay, wait, fine. I'll give you the power.
No, you do the introductions. it's the part of the show I dread the most.
It was my mistake. It was a USB connection that was loose. But
isn't that always the way?
Beside over there also is Gila.
Hello!
Joining us.
Yeah, way to blast out my eardrums, Gila. Thank you for that.
Yeah, looking good on the levels. I was going through trying to make some adjustments. And also with us this evening is none other than...
Alex. His name is Alex.
Alex.
Yeah. You forgot his name?
Yeah. Well, you know, hello, everybody.
All right. Well, you know what? If we can get started anytime this hour, that'd be great, because we only are on for an hour. We do have another hour or so afterwards that follows 8 o'clock on YouTube on channel 2600 there. And you can follow the link that is on our main 2600.com webpage, or just go to channel 2600 and figure it out at 8 o'clock. So I was trying to talk about this story about FTX. Somebody want to just explain quickly what FTX is? It's cryptocurrency. It's how do you describe it?
It's an exchange where people go to turn fiat money, cash, into cryptocurrency and trade cryptocurrency with others and, generally gamble with cryptocurrency.
But also do the opposite, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's right. Also to cash out, yeah.
Well, as you may have heard, FTX collapsed, was basically destroyed. But this interesting story, FTX's new boss has accused the disgraced CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, of hacking into his own company while in custody of the, I've never said this word before, Bahamian? Is that how you say it?
Bahamian.
Bahamian. See, I knew I'd get it wrong. The government of the Bahamas, but the Bahamian government. Okay. While in their custody, they insisted that he hack, this is alleged, insisted that he hack into his company to obtain digital assets that belonged to FTX after they filed for bankruptcy. That's according to a bombshell lawsuit filed on Thursday. John J. Ray is an insolvency expert. That must be fun. Who steered energy firm Enron through its infamous $23 billion bankruptcy following a massive accounting scandal. He alleged the unauthorized access transferred FTX assets into accounts outside the control of management, according to the Wall Street Journal. The Bahamian government is responsible for directing unauthorized access to the debtors' systems for the purpose of obtaining digital assets of the debtors. The filing also alleged that Mr. Bankman-Fried and FTX co-founder Gary Wang stated in recorded and verified text that Bahamas regulators instructed that certain post-petition transfers of debtor assets be made by Mr. Wang and Mr. Bankman-Fried, who the debtors understand were both effectively in the custody of Bahamas authorities, and that such assets were custodied, yes, that's a verb, on fire blocks under control of Bahamian government. Not quite sure what a fire block is, but it's capitalized, so it must be important. Basically what this means is that the people who lost money, the actual individual people like you and me, are doubly screwed now because the money was taken and put someplace where they can not get access to it at all, where nobody can get access to it at all. And we don't really know who it is that did this, although the lawsuit alleges that it was Sam Bankman-Fried himself. I mean, the story just gets more and more bizarre as every day goes by. Alex, any thoughts on this? Is this making new ground in legal shenanigans?
Yeah, I heard all about this over the last couple of days, and it's been the most interesting aspect of the FTX story by far, to my mind, because, you know, here you have a very, very unusual situation of a founder of a company being directed by a governmental regulator, in essence, to acquire unauthorized access to his own systems, which in and of itself doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, because if they were his systems, then he wouldn't have had to exceed any kind of authorization. But yet the assets didn't belong to him. So I would argue that, you know, that there is some form of access authorization that's been exceeded, because he's taken into a bunch of these digital assets into custody and put them into the possession of a third party. So how all of this is going to shake out is going to be extraordinarily weird. Then you also have competing bankruptcy proceedings between the United States. Whoa, sorry about that.
Really, Alex? You let the dog in the room that you're broadcasting from?
That's my beagle.
And then you get him angry somehow?
Firm position on antitrust.
I'm sorry for all the listeners who are just jolted out of our skin by this. Maybe there's another room the dog can go into.
And now I also have a sick 4-year-old coming over here to say
that's preferable. That's preferable. As long as he doesn't cuss. Hopefully he doesn't know those words yet.
Yeah, well, you never know.
He doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, you know, you want to say hi? No? Okay. All right. Anyhow, while my son is on my lap here, I think the other interesting aspect of this is that the competing bankruptcy proceedings between the United States and the Bahamas, and where these assets that were placed into the custody of the Bahamian authorities are going to end up going. I mean, are they going to have some kind of priority return to persons that were affected by this in the Bahamas, or maybe those who have some kind of closer connection, let's say, to the Bahamas? Is there going to be some kind of priority given to them? All of this is really unclear at the moment, but this is very much uncharted territory and very strange for all of these facts and circumstances to come into play all around the bankruptcy filing, the hacking, the missing assets, the fact that there was, you know, no controls around, you know, the acquisition of these particular assets, their use, the governance principles. I mean, everything that's shaking out of the FTX story is just making this look worse and worse and worse. And especially because this was one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. It's been real eye opener to see all these details shake out in the bankruptcy proceeding. I mean, things like private keys being stored in unsecured Gmail accounts. I mean, all kinds of just absolutely terrible things from a security practitioner's perspective. But then from the legal perspective of corporate governance, all of this was just completely foul and wrong, too. So,
can I just add something here? The guy I mentioned before, John J. Ray, remember, this is the guy who oversaw what was going on with Enron through that $23 billion bankruptcy. What he had to say about this, about FTX: never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of trustworthy financial information as occurred here. Again, this is the guy that oversaw the Enron debacle. So, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that there really weren't any adults in the room, despite all of this massive amount of capital coming from very sophisticated investors. You would think that some of these investors might have had some oversight into the company or would have taken board seats. But I think all of them were gun shy in the sense that if they did have a board seat, there would be some kind of liability for a board member in the event that the platform collapsed like it did. And you know, I don't think there's an insurer out there who would give you a sufficient amount of coverage in an errors and omission policy to take care of all of that liability that would attach to being a director of this particular company.
I've been impressed with the rapid changing dynamic. I mean, it was very, very fast the way a lot of this has transpired.
Yeah, it's pretty speedy, and you know, it gets weirder and weirder by the day, as I said, but in different ways. Here's a bit of a piece from VulcanPost.com: as if the billions lost by millions of people, the billions lost by millions of people in the collapse of the second largest crypto exchange wasn't enough. Turns out the hacker, quote unquote, who got away with close to $300 million worth of cryptocurrencies out of an estimated $477 million stolen during the turmoil from the failed company, that person, whoever they are, has now begun manipulating prices of Ether, dumping it by as much as 7% within hours. And as of when this started happening, that person was the 35th largest holder of Ether in the world. And just to sum this up in a rather eloquent way, ultimately, we now have a single anonymous crook/madman making waves in the market, able to influence prices of even the largest cryptocurrencies by using stolen funds. Someone who has become a centimillionaire. What's a centimillionaire? C-E-N-T-I millionaire.
100 million.
That's what that means? I've never heard that word used before. So if you have $100 million, you're a centimillionaire.
100 or hundreds of millions.
Something to aspire to. Okay. Someone who has become a centimillionaire without putting a gun to anybody's head or, in fact, without even setting a foot outside their door. Well, you assume that. But, yeah, it just it's nuts. It's where does it end? Do you think this is the end of crypto, folks?
No, I don't. I don't think it's the end of crypto at all. In fact, I think it's a new beginning of crypto. I know there's some static between the hacker community and the cryptocurrency community, and I wish that we could bridge that divide in some respects. And I think it's our job in a lot of respects to bridge that divide, because there's so many aspects of cybersecurity that are so important to cryptocurrency. And I think that cryptocurrency is going to become more important to cybersecurity over the next coming months and years that we see this. But as we talked about a bit on overtime last week, I think that this is just going to be par for the course for a little while as part of this cryptocurrency winter. We've seen Celsius declare bankruptcy. We've seen FTX declare bankruptcy. It seems like both of those places didn't have great corporate governance, leadership, security controls, et cetera, in place. And I think we're going to see a lot of these places that that were shambolic on the inside, but maybe looked okay on the outside, going to continue to fall. You know, everything that was a house of cards is going to begin to tumble. And I think we're going to be left with maybe it'll be a bit of a wasteland for a while, but I think it will be time to rebuild. And I think we're going to rebuild on the basis of cryptocurrencies that have a better foundation and a better basis and more utility and more functionality than the existing crop of nonsense that's been out there for a while. And in particular, I'm talking about Ethereum itself, even though it's subject to some market manipulation because of this bad actor. I think Ethereum is going to be the one that's that stands the true test of time and is at the top of the heap.
Yeah, I think inherent to any of these sort of value exchange systems, monetary, there's a level of trust at some part of it that needs to be there for people to, for there to be uptake of it, whether whatever currency it is.
And there are many, and they're all feeling the pinch at this point, looks like. But we'll stay on top of this as it gets weirder and weirder. Are you listening to Off the Hook here on WBAI? Please support WBAI by going to the website, givetowbai.org, pledging whatever you can to help keep this radio station going. Because like many others, we're in dire times, and we need to get through them, because voices are important. Voices of opposition, alternative viewpoints, and just investigative reporting, as well as alternative cultures and all sorts of other fun things that appear on our airwaves in a typical week. It's crucial. It's vital. It's unlike anything else heard, even in New York City. So the website, givetowbai.org, the phone number, 212-209-2950. And again, we accept any amount. We take credit cards, and every bit counts. It's extremely important that we stay on the air, right?
Yeah, everyone, please think of us as you're putting together gifts at the end of the year. We need you. This is a community radio. It doesn't happen without the community. So exactly. Please find one of the methods that we've mentioned and contribute what you can. And consider becoming a recurring donor and perhaps even a member of the station.
It's a good slogan in there somewhere, community radio. We're providing the radio. Now we need the community. You know, so let's put the two together so we have community radio. I'm sure someone thought of that. Go ahead, Gila.
So just wanted to put in a quick plug. As I'm pretty sure most of our listeners know, tomorrow is Thanksgiving in the great old United States.
Wait, that's this week? Wait a minute. I thought it was next week.
I heard it was coming.
You should be defrosting your turkey
I'll be right back.
And, you know, there's kind of an unofficial calendar for the week after Thanksgiving. And, you know, everybody goes shopping on Black Friday. And now there's Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday was a thing, and now some places are talking about Stock Monday. And next week, a week from yesterday, is Giving Tuesday. And if you haven't thought about donating to WBAI and you want to wait till the official Giving Day that comes after the fiesta of purchasing that is the few days after Thanksgiving, please consider giving to WBAI on Giving Tuesday. I'm sure you've heard from a lot of nonprofits in your world and in your sphere, but BAI should definitely rate a spot on your list this year. So, you know, send money to BAI, get the tax write-off for the end of the year. It's a win-win. Do what you can and help us stay on the air.
Yeah, this is community radio, as you said, and without the community, there is no radio. And this, right now, is how the community keeps us on the radio. This is the only thing that's been keeping us on the air for, 62 years now. And we don't sell ads. We don't sell your ears to anybody who wants them. We don't sell your interest. We don't sell your data. All we can sell is ourselves and what we're doing and what we're producing and what we're putting out on the airwaves. And that's there because you want it there. That's there because you, right now, who are listening, call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org. That's give the numeral to wbai.org and contribute what you can to keep us doing what we're doing here at WBAI.
And thank you to all those people who we know are calling because we asked you to and because, you know, it's the right thing to do and because you value community radio and want to keep hearing Off the Hook on as many Wednesday nights as possible. So thank you. Give to WBAI.org, 212-209-2950. Rob, you've been spoken to about posting killer robot stories to the list. And I'm told that you did it again today with a story from a place called missionlocal.org. And the title simply reads, Robots Authorized to Kill in San Francisco Police Department Draft Policy. You want to explain this? So there's killer robots now that San Francisco is going to unleash on the public?
That appears to be the plan, according to a policy proposal that's headed for San Francisco's Board of Supervisors approval. This proposal would explicitly authorize San Francisco police to program their robots to autonomously kill people. Police departments all over the world have been using robots for all sorts of things, the sorts of dangerous situations you don't want to send a human police officer into or just to get the coffee or whatever. But the robots themselves, according to this proposal, will have the option to end your life.
So Black Mirror has arrived. We are mm-hmm. here, and I'm just looking at this story, pieces of it. The draft policy has faced criticism from advocates for its language on robot force, as well as that's force used by robots, not like the Air Force. It's actually the force that the robot will use, as well as for excluding hundreds of assault rifles from its inventory of military style weapons. And for not including personnel costs in the price of its weapons. I'm not sure if that's related. Are they giving the assault-style weapons to the robots? I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm in the United States, so I should probably believe it. Here's a quote. Robots will only be used as a deadly force option when risk of loss of life to members of the public or officers are imminent and outweigh any other force option available to the police department. Now, I've heard that said by humans many times when killing unarmed people. Are the robots going to have the same level of judgment where they view certain people as a threat by default?
This is a very interesting question. I mean, robots are like any other computer. They're very sophisticated idiots. They're very good at telling them exactly what's they're very good at accomplishing exactly what's programmed into them. But they're not so good at making the sort of fuzzy decisions, the day-to-day decisions. How many times do you ask Alexa or Siri or whoever to like play one song and instead it does something completely different? Computers are not very good right now at distinguishing whether you want to hear the Weather Girls or hear the weather. And it's that sort of technology that's going to decide whether it needs to shoot you with a gun or not. And that terrifies me. And not just because I was raised on RoboCop movies.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Alex, tell me, should we be really scared by what we're seeing here?
I mean, it sounds like, you know, San Francisco should frankly know better. I mean, this is a city that insofar as I recall, had banned facial recognition earlier than most other cities in the country, is heavily involved with technology, should understand the perils of technology. And I feel like technologists understand the limits of technology better than anybody else. I mean, this is the reason why most of us that work in cybersecurity don't have electronic locks on our doors and Alexas in every single room of our house. You know, all these things are because we're distrustful of technology. And I think, you know, my little Ido here is also somewhat. Ido, do you like robots? But you have to say it out loud.
No.
Okay. He doesn't like robots either.
Smart kid.
I mean, and the other thing is, I mean, to think about robots and where they are, for God's sakes, I mean, my Roomba continually gets stuck on the edge of my stairs. I mean, we're going to be trusting robots to have some kind of judgment about lethal force. And I mean, it really sounds like some kind of new Black Mirror episode in the making, where the notion or the idea of self-preservation of a robot can override a human life. I mean, this is just, you know, ridiculous science fiction like stuff from the 50s and 60s that we're seeing play out now in 2022. Yep. Okay.
Not 60s, 65.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good.
Good point.
All right.
Kyle, yep. Go ahead.
Oh, I just was imagining the logical extent of a lot of this, which is a sort of blameless environment where humans controlling them and aren't necessarily at fault. It's a situation where the robot becomes the excuse or the reason, and it is that it went haywire, or there was some error or malfunction, or the person didn't treat the robot the way the robot needed to be treated, that it is, you know, something that humans should inherently understand now, and all of that, those sort of etiquettes. It's a whole different landscape of thinking about an authority that can be wielded against citizenry.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and talking of technologists who have various feelings on this, I got wind of the story through a person called Kat Scott, who works with OpenRobotics.org and other such things, and knows this stuff, and has expressed the interest in anyone who wants to help put together a letter to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. So you can find Kat Scott, if you're interested in that, at kscottz on Twitter. That's KSCOTTZ on Twitter, or on Mastodon at kscottz@sfba.social.
You know, I'm wondering if cops are going to be moving into using robots aggressively. I wonder if criminals will do the same, you know, have a robot rob a bank or steal things from a house or do God knows what else. It's, I mean, it's funny, but it's also really scary because there are people who are being paid to figure these things out right now. Gil, looks like you have something.
Well, no, I was thinking about robots, drones, where the line is. And yeah, will there be some time where a robot is robbing a bank and another robot comes in to stop it, and then the whole bank blows up because the robot... Like, this does not lead anywhere good. I can't... Is there ever a good sentence that starts with robots?
There's some good songs that start with robots, but I don't know if there's any good scenarios that start with robots. But here's something interesting. This might make people feel better. If you're dealing with any kind of financial issues this holiday season, if you're worried about where your next check is going to come from, et cetera, or how you've... you know, managed yourself over the past year or bunch of years or lifetime. The Alexa, the Amazon Alexa, what we all consider it to be, we just talked about it now, we all consider it to be this incredible thing, big success. No, the headline reads, Amazon Alexa deemed colossal failure following $10 billion loss. $10 billion loss. They say in the first quarter of this year alone, Alexa lost $3 billion. I don't know how that's even possible. What is Alexa doing that's losing $3 billion in a single quarter? Apparently, they wanted Alexa to be used. I'm sorry for everyone whose Alexa's I'm triggering by saying this so many times. But what they wanted Alexa to be able to do was get people to buy more things. And apparently it's not doing that so much, but it's doing something else. It's helping people in various ways. Yes, it's spying on you too. I know that. It's bad. It's evil. Yeah, we're going to put that aside for the moment. But what people are using it for, they find to be rather convenient, you know, playing radio stations or telling you the temperature or God knows what else they're getting these things to do, tying it into your house and turning on the lights. But somehow it's a colossal failure. Something we just assumed was working isn't. I don't know what they're going to do with it. If they're going to just make it suddenly stop working and everybody has paid for these things and they'll be upset. And plus, they're not the only one out there. You know, there's all kinds of other personal assistant devices. You guys have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for them is that from the beginning, they wanted this to be a tool that would bring in money. People would shop with the Alexa device. But as we reported early on in Alexa's life, we reported on this program about stories like when a kid, you know, ordered an expensive dollhouse unbeknownst to their parents, and other mishaps were happening where Alexa was buying things that the owners didn't necessarily want. So they had to dial all that stuff back. But in the meantime, yeah, it is a convenient thing for like switching the lights on and off, listening to music, podcasts, whatever. You know, they basically put their eggs in a basket that no longer really exists. And that there, it also connects to other issues with the quality of shopping on the Amazon site, which is not what it was.